I'm thrilled to be here. I don't get a lot of opportunities to do things like this. So, my name's Josh. I am a chainsaw. I work in forestry, not unexpected. My dad was a table saw, and my mom was a necklace. And so that's kind of how it came to pass.
You are very powerful.
Thank you.
You're also, I hope it's okay to say, for me as a human, there's something scary about a chainsaw, mm-hmm. The danger of it. And even sitting here with you, I realize I feel a little bit of anxiety. Just being near your blades. Do you feel that when you're around humans, the sort of your impact on?
I do. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. And I try to be very careful and mindful of it. I think there's a fear that stems from just the power and the capacity for destruction or raw metal kinetic energy that I'm capable of. But I also think it's a lot of media-driven hype, right? You know, there's no Texas buzzsaw massacre. There's no Texas handsaw massacre. It's chainsaws, I think, are kind of mythologized when I consider myself a horticultural implement more than a wreaker of damage.
I read in getting ready for this interview, I read that the average chainsaw injury mm-hmm. requires 110 stitches.
Wow. Yeah.
Can you tell me, if it's not too hard for you, can you tell me about the time that you caused an injury to a human?
I figured this might come up. You know, I haven't talked about it much because it was kind of a troubled day in my own past. But it was a hot day. I was in rural Oregon. We were almost done with the job. My operator that day was working unsupervised, just thought he could blaze through the last few tasks. Maybe trying to work a little too hard to get through the day, go home and see his family. I sympathize. It was a sweaty day, and his hand slipped, and my motor fell on his foot. Broke his smallest toe. It was a hard day for me because to cause someone physical harm, it's just so antithetical to the way I try to work and who I think I am. I really had to do some soul searching. And fortunately, he was just in a walking boot.
Well, we talked about my fear of you.
Mm-hmm.
What's scary to you as a chainsaw?
Well, I mean, spiders, but that's everybody, I think. But really, so I do, ever since that injury, I think a lot about, I fear hurting someone else and hurting someone worse. And it's kind of ironic because long before we were mostly employed for forestry, chainsaws were actually developed as surgical tools.
You're saying chainsaws were originally designed to cut open living people?
Yeah. Which sounds so grotesque to me now because that is... It just, the horror of it.
It's funny because you're held by a person,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of what they're thinking, like they're just thinking about not touching you in mm-hmm. a way, at least touching you on your chain.
Yep.
What's it feel like when you're, I guess, getting ready to be used
mm-hmm.
and you see your operator put on eye protection and mm-hmm. ear protection mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe those special pants?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think... In a good relationship between a human and a chainsaw, those things aren't about fear. They're about respect and they're about safety. You know, it's not an insult when someone puts on a condom, right? It's just a precaution that's taken, and that can be in a very loving relationship. And I think that's what I appreciated and respected, and I appreciate that they're treating me with respect.
Is it, just speaking of the people, the person that uses you, do we call them a lumberjack? Is that still?
Lumberjack or lumberjell. That's a female lumberjack.
Is a lumberjell.
A lumberjell. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if that works across the object world, like as a female Jack in the Box.
A Jill in the Box?
Yeah.
Actually, it's a Diane in the Box.
Hello?
Hi, is this Audrey?
Yes, it is indeed. Is that Ian?
It is. Hello.
Hello to you. How do you do?
I'm well.
Hands across the sea.
So, Audrey, I wanted to talk to you because you, in World War II, you were part of the Women's Timber Corps,
yes.
the Lumberjills.
That's right.
And they were formed in 1942. When did you join up?
I can't remember the year now, but I was in domestic service during the war through the Battle of Britain and all the rest of it. And I thought I ought to be doing something a bit more useful than waiting on people who could wait on themselves, if you like. And at this time, I was 17 and 10 months.
Wow.
And I had to get permission from my parents because I still wasn't 18.
My understanding is that those of you in the Timber Corps,
yeah.
You were felling trees that were used in the war effort. Like telegraph poles, the rails that they used on the beach at D-Day.
That's right. And we did some beach trees which went in the Mosquito aircraft.
Wait, what's that?
A Mosquito aircraft?
Yeah.
That was the all wood bomber that we had, 2-engine de Havilland Mosquito.
Oh.
And if you look up Mosquito. No doubt you've got one of these magic boxes. You can press buttons and you'll see it was a 2-seater. Wasn't armed at all because they wanted it for speed. So it had no guns or bombs or anything to start with.
I'm looking at it right here. This plane was made out of wood that you helped chop down.
Yeah.
What was it like doing this work?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, you shouldn't say you enjoyed the war, but the war started. It was horrible, but we were doing our best in a tight situation because it was pretty tight at a few times.
Yeah.
Although we didn't get up and fight hand to hand or bomb people or anything. In a way, the wood helped also.
Yeah. Audrey, can I ask, do you remember what you did when the war ended?
Yes, I couldn't believe it. It's because we thought, oh, now what happens? We got a thank you letter for the lady and 20, for my 3.5 years' work, I got 20 clothing coupons. And the first thing I did was bought myself a nice tweed overcoat. That was 18 coupons, so I left 2.
So for 3 years of service, you got a thank you note and a tweed overcoat.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Well, Audrey, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Right. Well, okay, Ian. Thanks very much for calling. And we might talk again one day. Okay?
Okay. I hope so.
Do you mind me asking what generation you're in?
I'm 41 years old. I was born in 1978.
Right. Gracious. To be so young.
Josh, I want to ask you a little bit about sound.
Mm-hmm.
You're very loud.
I am.
Not as a speaker, but when you're, I guess, working.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very loud.
How does it feel being that loud?
It feels good.
Yeah?
Yeah. And it's very liberating. It's liberating in part because it can't be another way. You know, I spend so much of my day quiet and inert, and two, when we're working, have just this guttural, mechanical bellow that I let out. It's very cathartic. It feels very powerful, and it feels like a warning. Hey, be careful. I think if I were quiet, people wouldn't understand the power within me. And so it feels fitting.
Are there other sounds you ever think about making? Would you like to make a different sound ever?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Who wouldn't? I think I would like to be able to have a roar of a lion. It feels very powerful and majestic, but in a different timbre. And there's a warmth, an organic warmth that I lack. And then I guess I would want to sound like Cher.
You want to sound like Cher?
Uh-huh.
So I pull your cord, mm-hmm. start you up.
Yeah.
And what comes out is Believe.
Believe, if I could turn back time. Because when you hear Cher, you think, that's Cher. Like, I sound like most other chainsaws. But when you hear Cher, that's just Cher. And I think that's a really special quality to have. And it's something that I aspire to, but I think will never be possible for me.
It's nice to picture, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine a forest and there's, say, five lumberjacks and mm-hmm. lumberjills there. Mm-hmm. Each of them has a chainsaw, and they start up and they sound like chainsaws. And then you start up.
Yeah. And I sound like Cher. People will notice. People would stand up and take notice.
I think so. Yeah.
That's it. That guy's doing something different.
I guess while we're on the subject, I'll ask you the question. Do you believe in life after love?
Oh, yeah. I think that's a chainsaw's whole job.
Life after love.
Yeah. Well, the growth of a tree, there's love there. There's nourishment and there's care and attention taken to growing something. And then once that's no more in its current form, there's no tree. I think I have to believe that there's life after that, or else I would keep me up nights. So when I'm making a nice clean line through a piece of wood, I think maybe this will be someone's home, or maybe a table, maybe several million toothpicks. It could be anything. And I think that potential is really what keeps me thriving and what gets me going in the morning. Yeah, I believe in life after love.
Is there for you a kind of dream object you would love a tree to become?
I like to think that some of the trees I've cut down have become boats.
Yeah.
I've never been on a boat.
Right.
But it sounds so thrilling. Just the unsteadiness of the ocean, I find very exhilarating. And that's what I find dangerous. Because, like, you drop me on the ground, I'm going to be fine at the end of the day. But if you drop me in the ocean, whew, there I go. You know, eroded by the salt, waterlogged. There's a danger to the sea that I respect and fear. And so I think a boat, because the wood, it bends so easily against my will and against my strength. But then to watch it master the waves, it really makes it feel like a partnership. Like I cut the tree down so that it might have a different strength and a different capacity than it does in nature.
It's almost like a game of rock, paper, scissors, really.
Mm-hmm.
Chainsaw beats tree.
Mm-hmm.
Tree beats ocean. Ocean
beats chainsaw.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you want to play a game of, mm-hmm. I guess, chainsaw, tree, ocean?
Sure. Chainsaw. Okay. Yeah.
I guess since you don't have hands, we'll just say it out loud.
Okay.
Just I'll say 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
And then we'll say what we are.
1, 2, 3.
Ocean.
Chainsaw.
Do you want to play again?
Sure. 1, 2, 3.
Ocean.
Chainsaw.
Okay.
All right, one more.
One, two, three.
Ocean. Chainsaw. Okay.
You know, you can choose to be something other than chainsaw.
Can I, though?
Josh, you're gas powered.
Oh, yeah.
Are you full right now, by the way?
It's a little presumptuous, but I'd say 3/4.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's it feel like when you run out of gas?
I've never really put words to it. It feels like being between things. I drop into this place. Everything's dark, and there's an emptiness.
Literally an emptiness.
Mm-hmm. And I'm floating. And there's no, I'm not expending any effort, and nothing is expected of me. And there are lights in the distance. I'm gliding, like a scalpel, I imagine. I imagine it's what it feels like to be a scalpel. I'm light, and I'm gliding. And it always smells like a horse was there recently, but isn't anymore. And it's the kind of dark where you understand how people thought the stars could look like constellations. Like, every little brightness feels so bright, and it feels like it must mean something. And quietly, and you can't tell exactly where from, there's always, gently in the distance, the song Sister Christian by Night Ranger. Every time. Always Sister Christian. Always in the distance. Never louder, never quieter. And then, I feel myself filling up, and then I'm full again. I'm sad to leave the emptiness, but it's nice to have balance, to have the full times and the empty times.
I think if I were to have guessed before meeting you, mm-hmm. You're the first chainsaw I've ever met.
Mm-hmm. I get that a lot.
I think I'm surprised. You seem more gentle than I would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
From afar, I would have imagined chainsaws to be a very bro-y kind of macho culture.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a lot of, especially in forestry, we're kind of socialized to have a very traditionally masculine attitude. Just sort of like, chop down this much wood, which is kind of, it's toxic. And it's not across the board, certainly, but there is kind of like, from the older generation of chainsaws, it's I think I fit in more with humans in a lot of ways than with other chainsaws.
Yeah, you're kind of in between, because chainsaws aren't exactly your community, but people, they're afraid of you.
Yeah. I don't think I have many friends. When a chainsaw shows up at a party, you know, something has gone awry. I think people are a little wary around me, and they don't know how to deal with me outside of work. I mean, people like to have me around. They need to have me around. We work together during the day, and then at the end of the day, they go home to their human families, and I hang out in the shed. That makes sense, but you know, no one ever wants to high five a chainsaw, tell them good job. No one ever gives a chainsaw a hug.
It's a little weird, maybe, but you know, do you want to? I give you a hug.
Aren't you afraid?
Well, I mean, I think I would ask that you not turn on.
Yeah, obviously.
I am afraid. It is scary.
I'm afraid.
What are you afraid of?
Well, I mean, the same thing you are, but from the opposite side.
I'm afraid of being murdered, and you're afraid of murdering.
Yeah. It is, when you say it, a different kind of fear.
Well, all right. Here goes. My arms around you.
Huh. That's a hug.
Tell me, you know, this is your first hug.
First hug.
I don't remember my first hug.
Oh, it's very weird. It's warm, but only in certain places, and I'm noticing that. But I wouldn't want it to be warm everywhere.
I will say,
mm-hmm.
You're sharper than the people I've hugged.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
As this goes on, I realize I'm really doing all of the embracing here.
Yeah.
But, you know, still, I guess it's still technically a hug.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you, for me, it's gotten to the point, as it does with humans, that the hug has gone on too long.
Oh, yeah, I'm feeling that. Definitely.
All right, I'm going to...
Sure. This is on you.
Yeah.
Do you hug everyone you interview?
You're the first.
Huh.
This is Everything is Alive. The show is produced by Jennifer Mills with me, Ian Chillog, and Eva Walchover. Josh, the Chainsaw, was played by Josh Gondelman. Josh is a comedian and writer whose new essay collection, Nice Try, Stories of Best Intentions and Mixed Results, is available everywhere now. Special thanks to Emily Spivak. Our editor is Hillary Frank. Her book is called Weird Parenting Wins. A big thanks to Audrey King for talking to us about her time as a lumberjill in World War II. Also, thank you to Joanna Fote, who's author of the book The Lumberjills, Britain's Forgotten Army, for her help as well. Music help this week from Kathleen Smith. Also, a special thanks to Rob Byers for his help. Episode art, our new episode art, is by Chips New York. Everything is Alive is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. Julie Shapiro, executive producer. You can get in touch with us any number of ways at everythingisalive.com. Find us on Twitter at Ian Chillog. Let me know if you would like to play a game of Chainsaw Tree Ocean. We'll see you soon.
Radiotopia from PRX.